Welcome back, folks. This is Mark Steiner, and we are going to leap into a subject that is really important and very painful, I think, in this community. When the news came out that Lord Scudo was shot and killed on Harford Road after attending a peace rally and basketball game here at Morgan State University, many people were in shock. Clearly, it wasn't just a killing. It was an execution. It wasn't the way it went down. And he was a key figure in Baltimore for many people. And then you look at what's been happening in the city. That happened the same day that a report came out saying Baltimore's growth in homicides has been the largest in the nation last year. And we, in the last 30 days, we've had 29 people killed in the streets of Baltimore. Most of those people who were killed were young and black. And the shootings are even higher. They've gone up. And the feeling of threat every day is here in our city. And we think about Freddie Gray's death at the hands of the police while in police custody. And somebody said to me the other day, well, he was we had the argument on our show with one of our guests, discussion, and he was saying, but he was carrying a deadly weapon. I said, it was a penknife. And so, but then when you think about that, I said, if you grew up in a certain neighborhood, if you were living in a certain community, you might walk around with a knife in your pocket every day. Something's in your pocket because you have to make sure that you're going to be able to walk back into the same house you walked out of when you got up that morning and left. And it's a very serious problem. So how do we put our hands around this problem? You can't arrest away out of this problem. Yet people who commit murders need to go to jail. There's no question about it, at least in my mind. But that's not the answer to dealing with the problems we face in our community. How do we put our hands around it? We have three activists and serious thinkers in the studio to wrestle with that. Devrock's back in the house. He's Minister of Culture for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. Devrock, always good to have you in the house.
Peace, Mark. How you doing, Mark?
I'm well. Mathana James Beifel is with us, Director of Community Education and Training with Turnaround, Inc., a visionary director for Healing Woman, Healing Nation. Always good to have you here, Mathana.
Thank you for having me.
And my dear friend Dee Watkins is in the house as well. Just brought me some cook-up ice cream, named after his book, The Cook-Up, a crack rock memoir. His first book was The Beast Side, Living and Dying While Black in America. He's a columnist for Salon. His work is being seen all over the globe, New York Times, The Guardian, Rolling Stone, and teaches creative writing at UB and founder of the Be More Writers Project as well.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
I can't wait to try this ice cream. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join the conversation. We want to hear your ideas and thoughts. What do we do? Send us an email to talkatsteinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. But what do we do? How do we begin to handle what faces our communities? And it's a huge problem, a huge issue. Lawrence Brown was on the show yesterday. He wrote a very impassioned, deeply thoughtful piece on Facebook about, and in his Facebook page, Brace, on what leads up to a murderous community, the racism, the segregation, the poverty that create a world like this, Devrock. I think that's, I think we lose sight of, if we lose sight of the root, we'll never figure out how to make this tree blossom in a different way.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the number one thing that leads to those types of communities is poverty. You know, our people need to work. Our people need to eat. And, you know, at any point in time, if you have any man, woman, child that has to decide between feeding their brothers and sisters, coming home and or not coming home, they want to feed their family and they want to go home. So, you know, in a battlefield, warriors going to do what they do in order to stay alive. That's the thesis, you know, that's what my thinking mind says, you know, but, you know, I'm in terrible pain and turmoil over the situation, you know, and how it's growing and something in my spirit is just feeling like it's something way deeper than just poverty that's actually happening here. You know, I mean, especially with Lil Scooter's death, especially, you know, the way the murders rose after the community started coming together after Freddie Gray, you know, so, you know, my intelligence tells me poverty creates murderous communities. And my feelings tell me, you know, that there's something more at bay with the specific things that are happening in our community in Baltimore.
Mathana?
What strikes me most about this and as he talked about the pain, I'm watching. I spent the last 6 or 7 weeks at Booker T. Middle School. The young man who just lost his life was a student there. So when I found out, it was because my students, my girls, were sending me, Miss Mathina, did you hear? So I'm watching young people lose their friends, their coworkers. So I watch their Instagram pages because you have to keep up with young people on social media.
Middle school.
He was 13 years old. 13 years old. And so I'm watching their Instagrams and their Snapchats, and it's all about death. And their friends, before Lil Scooter, their friends who are losing their lives. So it's not even just what adults are going through. Our young people are being, I'm getting emotional. Our young people are getting used to watching and burying their friends. That's what really just breaks my heart about it. I'm watching 13 and 14-year-old girls cry and put rest in peace signs on their Instagram pages. I'd rather see their duck lips.
It's okay, Mathena. I understand. It's deep. D.
So I was born in the 80s and raised in the 90s. And, you know, it hurts me to say this, but it's not a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've been used to death since I was a child. So some of the ideas that they put out, like the Ferguson effect, there's no such thing as a Ferguson effect. People aren't killing each other because of what happened in Ferguson. Like, people aren't saying, yo, the police officers are not going to bother us, so we're going to act crazy. It comes with the territory. Like, it is what it is. We've never, ever, you know, none of us have ever thought that the police officers were going to stop us from doing something with love or with the intention of being, like, a good officer or anything like that. So they've never really posed a threat as far as the way the streets work. And, you know, I think I agreed with everything that DevRock was saying. It's like, you know, unemployment will go down in America across the board except when it reaches the African-American community.
So,
institutional racism still has a way of locking us out of the workforce. The only place to work a lot of times is the block, the corner, the streets. It's the only way you can get an income. So if everybody else is getting a job and unemployment's going down and everybody else is, you know, they buy houses and they buy cars and they're getting the opportunity to dangle that little bit of wealth in front of your face and you stuck. Again, in America, in this country, the country where the streets are supposed to be paved with gold, that makes a person crazy. It makes you crazy. And you know, it's very unfortunate what happened to Scooter. I just talked to Scooter at this little hookah lounge called Jane, though, and I was just telling him about tunnel vision. Like, yo, block everything out. Block everything out. Keep moving forward. Keep moving forward. Keep moving forward. And it's, you know, it's – so I'm hurt by not just him and his potential, but all of these young people and then my own trauma and my own past, because it's not – this isn't something new. This is something that has been going on in our community for way too long.
So one of the things that you all said in one way or another is that – and, I mean – the racism, dislocation, poverty, isolation that affects young people in inner-city neighborhoods across America, be they black, Native American, whoever they are, black, I mean, Puerto Rican, whoever they may be.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're all talking about is kind of a subtext to me of there's a deep-rooted pain in the psyche of people who are locked away from the rest of the world. And the question of that's part of – I mean, when people say you need more police presence to stop the violence, but then the other part you tried to say to Devrick was, I mean, there's something deeper going on here that has to be gotten to, and can it be gotten to without the social conditions changing?
Absolutely not.
Right? I mean, can you get to the soul of somebody to not be in a world where you have to kill or be killed and have to live that kind of life without the condition changing?
Us being locked out of society is a tradition. I was raised by murderers, and I'm sure that I know my parents were too. I don't know who their parents were raised by, but I was raised by murderers. It's a tradition, like not being able to fully assimilate, like, you know, even if we look at how media works now. So I gave away 500 books a couple of weeks ago, and it's not college professor gives away 500 books. It's ex-drug dealer gives away 500 books. I ain't sold a drug in 15, 20 years. Like, you know, so
right,
it's
right,
like
right.
I get what they, you know, I get, like, you know, well, actually, I don't get it. What I'm saying is that, like, It's always a way to let you know that, okay, regardless of what you're doing, how far you come, even if you think you made it in this world, you still an outsider. So imagine if you don't make it, and you, that makes you like a double outsider. And that's why these things continue to exist. It's like if people had jobs and opportunity and a non-militarized police force and a chance to actually be something, then it would be less murders.
I mean, what, Mathana, what do we begin to say to people in the community? People who live have to live with it every day, with the fear. What do we say? I mean, what can be? All right. Tomorrow morning, we're not going to change the nature of the depth of racism and poverty in this country or in Baltimore City. It's not going to happen tomorrow morning. But while we're fighting to change that, what do we do to save the lives of the people in this community so they're not taken and not damaged and injured and murdered?
And there's no magic pill or sprinkly fairy dust.
No.
There's nothing remarkable. There's nothing probably that any of us could really say that hasn't already been said. But it's like a constant reminder. It's like the tickle in your throat when you're like, it's a constant reminder that we have to consistently start, one, with ourselves, two, within our own homes, right? Everybody we're connected to. So let me shift it just for context in a second and say, you know, at one point I have a brother who, in his growth and development, didn't quite respect women in the way that I would like, right? And so my brother, I love him, but at one point I remember us having a conversation. He kept calling the young woman a bee, and this bee did it, and I would hang up on him. Then he called back and was like, "Well, we got disconnected, so let me finish telling you what happened." And this bee clicked. And then he called back the third time. I was like, "You're not catching on what I'm saying. You cannot do that, because the same you're doing it to me, you have somebody who's doing it to your, you know, six other sisters." So in the same context, it becomes about what we choose to do and control our controllables. There's some things we can't control. Like you said, we're not going to shift everything tomorrow. But what do you do for yourself? What do you do for the people you're connected to? How do you hold each other? How do we hold each other accountable? And each of us are part of the problem as much as we are part of the solution, right? That we have to have a role, and however your role looks. My role is not the same as your role, right? But what my role is, what can I use in my unique abilities, my way of teaching and reaching to make a shift? And it starts with yourself, and it starts with everybody you're connected with.
Dev?
Absolutely. I am, you know, very much so clear that, you know, each one reach one, each one teach one is probably the most important way we're going to be able to do this thing. You know, as everything is happening and everything is unraveling and playing out, I'm watching people, you know, all over the country, all over my Facebook, all over my timeline, begin to have a switch go off in their head and say, okay, I quit everything regular. Regular keep leading up to what we getting. Now I'm about to do something different. You know what I'm saying? And the more people that decide to do something different, they each have a grasping arm of 5 to 6 people. So we just got to continue to pound on top of that. You know, I witnessed a brother, Coley, bring us out to Penn North the other day at 4, just to stand and take a picture and say, you know, we pledge to not kill our people. Now, some people might look and say, man, what are you doing that for? But it's 10, 20, 30 people that look up to that man who see that and who say, all right, you know what? I was a shooter, or I am a shooter. You know what? On Coley word, I'm a chill. As much as I can, you know, but I still think that there's something deeper that needs to be discussed. I want people to think. I want people to pay attention. And if I could, real quick, I would like to tell a short story.
Okay.
After the riots, you know, when it was this proclaimed Mondawmin purge that was supposed to happen last year, right? We had observers on the ground, right? Buses were brought into Mondawmin, mind you, in Mondawmin area, it's 8 schools, black and brown children, 8 schools. Buses are, and it's a terminal, it's a hub, how people get from east to west, how people get from downtown, how they get, you know, they come from school, they get on the subway, they get to Mondawmin, and they go home, vice versa. Why would you bring kids into that space, shut the buses down, send the buses away, and not allow people to leave the community in a day where you know it's supposed to be a huge purge? And these people who were there weren't the people who they were looking for to riot. So these people were able to stand free, pay attention. They watch cops set up on all of these different blocks and side streets, push kids down one street, bring them back up another. If you have the power to say no more buses can go to Mondawmin after 4 p.m., you have the power to say buses are only allowed to take children home. You're not allowed to bring anybody in. You're only allowed to take children home, right? The reason why I'm bringing up this story is that if our governments and the people who enforce our policies are able to make horrible decisions like leave all the kids that are down there without transportation in a time where people are supposed to act up and then police them in a manner that is super aggressive, if those things can happen, then I believe that there's a possibility that after Freddie Gray happened and after we rebelled and we rose up and we decided we want to do something, I believe that there could have been a conversation where police officers said, we're going to police less. So that we can show the people the fear that they need to have and why they need to respect us. I can see people conspiring to do a lot of different things. As I was hearing about the murder rate rising after Freddie Gray, and the people that I was talking to in the community had no idea who was committing these crimes, right? And so that to me speaks to the level of organization of the system that we in. And that's why it's no magic pill. And that's why this conversation is hard. And that's why my feelings are hurt, because I can't see after a peace rally, I just can't see an enemy of school to really plotting after a peace rally. I just don't see it for myself. Now, things happen and I can't rule that out, but I feel absolutely crazy, you know, about what's going on.
Then I'm up on the phone to go ahead, D.
So I'm a dreamer, and, you know, one of the things that I do different is, well, not just me, but I kind of, you know, I look at the things that everybody are doing and I look at the things that people have done before me, and then I just try to add my own spin in a different way to trying to attack these issues. Mm-hmm. That's why I always got to go back to literacy. I know for myself, like, the more I read, the more I thought, the better decisions I made. So things that I would do when I was ignorant were things that seemed crazy to me once I'd started thinking critically about what I was going to do with my life and what I was going to be and how I was going to plan these things out. So then I think about not just myself, but all of my friends and all of the people older than me and younger than me that hated reading. And when I sit down and I write these books and I write these essays and I put these things together and I deliver them to these high school, mostly high schools, some middle schools, these kids are reading, so they have the potential to be better than me. And this is the next generation of people coming up who are supposed to be maybe caught up in this stuff and maybe not. So I try my best to get them thinking early. If I can help them get on to reading and thinking critically early, then maybe we have a chance at solving these issues when it's their time to step up. And so I try to attack it like that.
No, you know, what you just said, you all said something very, all three of you just said something very deep in your own, in different ways. And I was thinking, starting with what you just said, Dee, I was thinking about this, that we do a huge disservice to our children in the city, in our schools. They're not taught to think critically. Mm-hmm. So when you meet a young kid, here's how frustrating it gets for me. These are the same kids who do the slinging in the street and whatever they have to do to survive and get over. You have conversations to sit down with them. And then you begin to realize that they've never been taught to think deeply. They don't have the language, the literal language, to express what they're feeling and thinking, because we haven't taught our kids how to do that. It's a learned skill. You're not born with language. Language is something you learn, right? I mean, and so, and I watch that with what we've done to our kids, and so it's then you put them in situations where they're faced with this life and death stuff all the time, or fearful of life and death, whether it's from the police or from a guy on the corner.
And we don't put it in context. We're not putting critical thinking in context and making it relevant to them. So they don't understand why they need to think critically. They don't get it, because as educators, we're not doing our job to let them know, like, yo, this is why we make you go to school. This is why we make you read. This is why we teach you this math. This is why we want you to know this history. We're not doing that. We're just throwing these stupid agendas and tests at them, and we're creating generations of drug users and murderers through education and tradition.
Or lack of education.
And what both of you just said is why I stopped teaching in schools.
That's why we need you in schools.
But no, I had to come from a different angle. I mean, I still teach as far as I do separate contracting. You know what I'm saying? So, but I can't follow within the system because I'm sitting with my middle school babies and some of my ninth grade boys, and they or girls, they can't tell me what's wrong. We can't even talk through the situation. You know what I mean? And then, just like you said, everybody else is kind of almost working against you. Depositing information. When you try and get people to understand, you know what I mean? The reason why you need to pay attention, if it's a whatever, a debate class, you may need to defend yourself verbally one day from accusation. That's why you need to pay attention in the debate. Why you need to pay attention in probability? Because you need to know the chances of different things that are happening if you act upon different actions. And, you know, it's not enough people. The system isn't created in which allowing these deep thinkers. You're absolutely correct.
One of the things I had a conversation with, and I asked the girls, this particular group of young women at Booker T, I said, okay, what resonated with you over the last, you know, 6 weeks or whatever we were together? And over the 6 weeks, we had so much behavior modification that we were doing to get through some of the content and information. And one of the girls said something that I was like, oh, it worked. She said, you told us to know whether or not we're a thermostat or a thermometer. This is my girl who walked out of class several times. And I said, tell me what that means. Do you remember what that means? She said, yeah. some arms in there, but she got to the point. And she said, we can't let everybody tell us how we're supposed to react. Sometimes we have to control how we react. And that one piece, it took us 7 weeks to get there. Mm. But she got it. She got it. So if we can get our young people to understand that, because most often they're reacting because they don't have, they just react. They don't have the ability to talk themselves and walk themselves through what they're feeling and how to react in a way that keeps them in integrity.
So, and folks, I do apologize. 410-319-8888. I saw some folks call in. We were talking here. We'll get you on the air as soon as you call. Bill, I saw you call a few others. 410-319-8888. Join the conversation. We want to know your ideas about why we are the way we are and what we do to change it. And how do we save the lives of the children in the city? 410-319-8888 is the number to call. Or write to us here at talkinsteinershow.org by email. Or you can tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do join us, 410-319-8888. And I think Steph just chatted over, I think the statistic is like 1 out of 10 Baltimore City fourth graders is reading on grade level. Low-income fourth graders, 90% are not on grade level. And that is just, that's a crime. Mm-hmm. To me, right? So the question is, let's say I've been saying that there are two things happening in Baltimore right now. One is we're watching the Port Covington battle, and that's about redevelopment and redevelopment for the whole city. And as I've been saying, if the redevelopment doesn't affect the poorest black working class communities in Baltimore, then it doesn't have to happen.
Right.
I mean, that's my bottom line. I say to all the kind of leaders of the city, leaders of foundations, that's the bottom line. It can't just be for them to build this place down there for mostly people of wealth and mostly white people of wealth to come and hang out and have fun and somebody get a $10 an hour job. No, that doesn't work. So, but the other part is in these trials around the death of Freddie Gray is a question of public safety and how we spend our public safety dollars. And maybe part of the answer, just immediate answer, is doing things in a different way and really pushing the idea of doing things in a different way. Like as example – I had Carlos Muhammad on here not long ago, and we were talking about the time when the Fruit of Islam incorporated. They had their own security company, ran the security in the high-rise housing projects in the 90s when you were a baby.
Yeah, I remember he was down there.
And when they ran the housing project security, they didn't carry guns. They just wore their little bow ties and suits, and they had men and women patrolling. Murder and shooting rates went down. Violent rates went down because people respected them and they could intervene. And I was thinking about the little 13-year-old boy who was shot by the police because he was carrying a water pistol that looked like a real gun and a basketball, right? If FOI or Safe Streets or Out for Justice Women or whoever they were in the streets that day, they would have seen that little boy and they would have walked over to him and said, what is that in your hand? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. And dealt with it in a totally different way. We have to think about how we patrol our streets in ways that we're not doing it. That's the thing.
You know what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen. you keep on building up the city and building up the city and displacing these people and mm-hmm. leaving them scattered all over the city. So nothing ever trickles down to the black community or poor blacks. It's just not going to happen. Even if they built 2,000 square foot trickle down zones for us black people to stand in, nothing's ever going to trickle down there. That's not going to happen. But what will happen is that crime is going to start to trickle into those new developed areas. Somebody got robbed in front of Belvedere Market yesterday. These people are, you know, these people are hungry, and it's only a matter of time before it starts to spill.
People are getting robbed right by the food market on Center Street down in Mount Vernon out in broad daylight.
You taking this money and you throwing it at these developers, and they throwing these places that black people will never be able to mm-hmm. afford to even hang around, you know, because even if they get a job there, like you said, it doesn't pay anything. It's only a matter of time you're setting yourself up. And so you're going to have to deal with this issue one way or another. You can't. Even the mind of Martin O'Malley, who tried to lock everybody up, you can't lock everybody up.
Come on,
It doesn't work like that. So it's like, that's why I said I try to look at it through my own lens. But one thing I appreciate about just the whole revolutionary and activist community in Baltimore is like I do what I do, and that's my thing. But then I respect LBS, and then now I'm learning more about you and your organization. So we all speak different languages, but we all have the same goal. So I love when we can get out here, we can get out, and we can talk about what we do and work and build off each other. And I kind of get upset when people bump heads, but then I also understand that. I don't bump heads with anybody. But when I see other people bump heads, I just want everybody to, you know, not hug, but at least shake a hand and make up or something like that.
So let me do what I promised. Folks are calling. Let me get them on the air with us and get their thoughts we can respond to. 410-319-8888. 29 people killed in the last 30 days in Baltimore. More being shot. What do we do? Erica, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome.
Fantastic. Alyssa, first I want to congratulate young men and women on the air for stepping up and doing what you do. My hat's off to you. Baltimore needs such individuals as you are to attack this issue. Secondly, again, born and raised, I've been in Baltimore City over 40 years. I'm very abreast of the issues, the matters that we have faced, from poverty, politics, the system, et cetera. What I believe, and again, we all have our perceptions, but I hear so much talk about what's going on in the community, the system, the government, et cetera, and no talk about the home. The home. The home where love is groomed. There's no God in the home. The responsibility of the father and the mother in the home. The demonstration of their love between one another so that you can teach your children. When we get that right and start demonstrating that, I do believe, even amongst the issues that we have now, though, you know, you can't change everybody. But I do believe, as the sister had made a statement earlier, that you can reach someone in that demonstration. And it takes time. But that's the real root of the matter. It's the home. And we can point fingers everywhere else we want. It doesn't excuse the issues that are happening in our community. But we got to start in the home. And it starts with love. When you get that right, I do believe, and I've seen it, because I'm a product of it. I'm a product of Baltimore City. That we can come up out of it, we can rise above it, we can be not only educated, we can be strong and demonstrative and go beyond these issues and matters.
Eric, I appreciate the call, and I think the statement. And Mathina, one of the things that hits me about Eric, what Erica just said. Now, when people like Erica say what they say, some people's first impulse is this is shut them down. Yeah. It's not about the upbringing. It's not about the parents. It's not mm-hmm. about the home. It's all about the social conditions. Nothing is linear.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So how we raise our children does play into everything that goes on. And they all have social conditions that fuel that as well. But, mm-hmm. I mean, so how do you respond to that?
So the community is made up of homes.
Right.
The community is made up of homes. And there's an African proverb that says, the ruin of a nation begins in the homes of its people. Mm. That's real. So she makes a valid point. And the thing that I think you're saying too, Mark, and I think we're all saying, is that for some reason we seem to live in such a strong either-or society. Mm. That's not what it is, right? That's what Dee was saying. We have in addition to. Because I can say, oh, I'm mad because so much of my work is around sexual violence. We need to be having that conversation about violence. That's not, it's all part and parcel. Nothing happens in a vacuum. And I'm going to find it. There's a quote we've all heard, if you teach a man to fish, what he'll eat for a day, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you teach a man, if you give him a fish, he'll eat for a day. If you teach a man to fish, he'll be able to eat until, this is the one I love, until the river gets polluted or dried out or really something happens, right? But if you teach the community
right.
how to structure itself, how to build their own fish farms, there's such things as fish farms. If we teach ourselves, you see what I'm saying? That's where the real shift to me happens, and that does not happen linearly. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. Yes. It happens when we institutionalize, yes, handling poverty, yes, having sexism and racism, yes, creating a community where our children do understand that they have a voice and they have a power, and we can't shut them down. We have to show them how to utilize those things. That's where you make the shift. So, yeah, teaching a man to fish, but how can we teach a man to create his own systems, communities, and by him, I do mean him as including women, to create their own systems and communities where they can thrive.
Right.
Yeah, right. Can I respond to that?
Sure. Oh, I think that does too.
Because, okay, real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely agree with what the caller said. It plays a part, but we gotta add that light to the system, because if mom and dad can't get a job, the love is gonna be kind of hard to spread. And you know, my grandmother was, you know, the most strongest woman in the history of people and women in the world. Like, my grandmother could make worlds move if she wanted to, right? You know, but she couldn't save me from my block. It don't matter how much church she went to. Mm-hmm. It don't matter how much she prayed for me. None of these things didn't matter, because when I came outside, I was walking into the piss of hell. I had to deal with that. So she couldn't stop me from when I got beaten. She couldn't stop me from getting beat up. She couldn't stop me from beating somebody up. She couldn't stop me from being shot. She couldn't do it. It's impossible. So we gotta always attack these systems that create these institutions and these traditions of this violence and this crime and where these things come from, because that's how you dig to the root. You can, you know, it's kind of hard to. You can love your family and have a great home, but at the same time, you got to go outside. You got to go to school. You're going to go through the streets. And you're from Baltimore City. Something's going to happen to you. Somebody's going to get killed. Somebody you know is going to get killed. Somebody, you're going to be affected by drugs. You're going to be affected by crime. You're going to get hurt. You're going to have to hurt somebody. It's guaranteed. It's guaranteed. And the system allows that to happen.
It does. And go ahead and jump in. But what you just said is what has it's insanity.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, this is the two things. This is the craziest thing. I agree and disagree, and I was so glad that Mathana said what she said, because it allows me to step back a little bit and say mine's from with less angst, you know, with less cut them off. John Henry Clark teaches us that the most revolutionary thing as a man that you can do is raise a family. Right? You know, but like she said, at the same time, if I'm a man who has all the odds stacked against me and system stacked against me, and I'm go to jail, families need wholeness in order to be correct. Right? So we can't expect incomplete families to do whole family jobs. I mean, it may happen, but that's an anomaly, you know? And then the second thing I'll say is that, you know, I consider a young man that I had a conversation with a day or two ago family, you know, and I'm talking to him and I'm hearing his story, and, you know, he jumped out there living on his own, and he, you know, he's talking about what he has to do now in order to take care of himself. And he's telling me what he's doing. And I understand that I can't say to him, go work at UPS or go work at FedEx and you can take care of all your situation. And then I also understand, though, that I can't allow him to continue doing what he's doing without protecting himself. Mm-hmm. But protecting himself could mean taking somebody else's baby. So imagine what type of, see, when we talking about the pain, we not really contextualizing it. I'm in a situation where I'm advocating all day for violence to be stopped, but I'm talking to my loved one, somebody who I'm caring for, and I'm saying, you know, this is what you're doing. Are you strapped? If you're going to be doing that, are you prepared for the consequences and the repercussions? Are you prepared for every action? How do you divide giving somebody your love and advice to protect them, even though it's morally against what you may be against? Because the system is one that does not allow you to do the right thing
and continuously pass through. And so, you know, that's just where I'm at. Right now, you know, as I talk to you all today, I talk to you all today not from a super analytic debate research place that LBS normally comes from. Mm-hmm. I am a hip-hop artist from Baltimore City who just witnessed the situation happened with Lil Scooter that has shed light on the fact that this is what we actually do go through every day. It made it so much bigger. When I come in the house, whatever day it was, Saturday, my son was waiting for me at the back door. Opened the door. Scooter died. Now, he ain't gonna talk about nothing else.
Your son said that.
My son. You know, when Moose's brother, Big Kev, I actually find out that that's my cousin. He died.
Yeah,
and my son was the first person to tell me that.
How old is your son?
He's 16. My oldest boy is 16. And he's thinking to himself, these people was bad. They did things. They transformed themselves. They put all of their energy into a craft like I tell him to. And then once they started making it, once they got to this position, now they lose their life or they lose their situation. Imagine how hard, much harder it is to have a conversation with my son about caring about the future. So many young people I talk to don't care about the future because they can't see past walking out the house the next morning. So whatever I can get right now, give me all of that right now because I'm not making it to 18. I'm not making it to Wednesday. You know, and I just want everybody to know that, you know, I'm hurt. It's a lot of people in the community hurt. And we just got to all do exactly what the people at this table are saying. Get your craft together. Get your situation in order. And feed the advice or feed whatever you can to as many people as possible that you can affect by what it is that you're doing.
So we don't have time for a call now, right? We should wait till after the break? Wait till after the break. Okay. So we're going to take a quick break in a second. And when we come back from the break, it's a news break. Do hold on. Rhonda, G, and Linda, we're going to come to your calls, 1, 2, 3, and come back to our guests as well to continue the conversation that we're having now into the next hour. So 410-319-8888. There's a lot to talk about here. Stay with us. We want your ideas, thoughts, and hearts on the table with us. Stay with us.
Game time. Won't stop. Bird flu. My city got the bird flu. It's game time. I think we need a ring or two. I think I got the bird flu. I think I got the bird flu. Purple, orange, and black. We rock purple, orange, and black. My team's purple, orange, and black. We bleed purple, orange, and black. We rock purple, orange, and black. My team's purple, orange, and black. We bleed purple, orange, and black. Baltimore, we up next. Purple, orange, and black. You know what I rap. Today I got on orange and my black baseball bat. The O's game on, I'm watching on my 60-inch. I was born in 93. Cal Ripken was the man. You ain't gotta tell me about them O's, cause boy, I've been a fan. Frankie Robinson, the first
Lord Scooter. We can always hear him. We'll never see him again, but we can always hear him at any time. And his death has sparked a conversation. Every death should spark a conversation in Baltimore, but his surely has sparked a conversation. And we are here with three really very fascinating, interesting, and deeply involved people who are wrestling with these issues every day. Dev Rock, Minister of Culture for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. Mathina James Brightfield, Director of Community Education and Training with Turnaround Inc. and Visionary Director for Heal a Woman, Heal a Nation. And Dee Watkins, who's written two books now, The Cook-Up, A Crack Rock Memoir, and The B-Side, Living and Dying While Black in America, and teaches creative writing at the University of Baltimore, founded the Be More Writers Project, takes his craft, his internationally now known craft, to the community and to young people to get them into reading and writing. Let's go right to the phones at 410-319-8888. As I said, I would. We'll take you in the order in which you called. Rhonda, you're on the air. Welcome. Morning.
I know it's an unrealistic, perhaps, suggestion, but I think in Baltimore, if they created like several campuses that were, holistic type of campuses where, you know, it's a center where there's a library, where there's actually, you know, a center where people can learn to work with animals, have training skills. I would have something called the Ex-Con Cafe, where former inmates can sort of run their own little center and reproduce some of the knowledge for others in the community once they come home from incarceration, because some of them are so brilliant and have so much to offer. And just instead of all this other type of development, develop something that's, you know, really accessible that people will want to come to, and, you know, take some of the money that goes into, I don't know, all the arts and the this and that, and centralize it so that the youth can afford, make it for them, for their communities. And we're not just, you know, building up this area and that area for this profit or that profit. I mean, there's some people out there, they have so much money. They could easily fund this kind of project, and Baltimore could be kind of a model that way. It would be really a very lovely space for people.
And I've seen the stuff you sent me, Rhonda, from many of the men inside, and the stuff they've written and thought about, and how deeply and how they're serious thinkers who want to do some change when they come outside. Deb, how do you respond to Rhonda?
Rhonda, I just want to say, you know, I agree with you. You know, and it's a lot of people who've been thinking that these things should exist, and, you know, I just want to challenge you to start something, start an organization, start convincing the people that you know, target the people that you think have the money and the people who you can speak to and talk to, and get on the ground and get it started. You know, at the point in which, you know, you've thought about it to the point where you've named the cafe, I think, you know, it's good, you know, that you should start the work of it. And a lot of people, sometimes we don't have a conversation about access and we don't be real. And just being real, from what you're saying, like, I feel like we need you to be a part of the movement, and we need you to be a person who plays that role. You know, I would love for those things to happen too. It's so many hoops to jump through. It's so much work to be done. You know, that's a far down the line thing. But if you come and assist and join in with us, I think that would be a beautiful idea.
And I think the ideas that Rhonda talked about are the kind of ideas she's saying that have to be invested in, as opposed to just investing in the same stuff we always invest in. I say it ad nauseum to people in power, which is that if what you're proposing for this city does not affect the lives of the poorest people and the poorest working class black neighborhoods in Baltimore, then it's not worth doing.
And we also must acknowledge we have to acknowledge that there's a lot of people making money off of poor black people, from these crooked banks to these crooked car dealers to prisons, which is a big business, to the hospitals, pharmaceutical companies, diabetes, HIV, AIDS, hypertension, pill. This is big money. So what we have to do is stop lying to ourselves and saying that the powers to be are full of good people. These people aren't good because they're making money off of pain. That's why I always go back to critical thinking and getting those skills to navigate through these society. Because as a young black woman, young black man in this world, you know, we line you up and we put a blindfold on you and we send you out to a racetrack full of hurdles. There's so many people waiting to pick you apart. These people who run these corporations and these entities, they're not good people. They're evil. And that's why this tradition of murder and pain and poverty is allowed to survive and thrive and continue and continue and continue. And the only way we're going to get out of it is if we learn how to think our ways out of it. We got to know that we're fighting. Most of us, when I was a kid, I didn't know why I had 40 people in my classroom. I didn't know why my teacher was tired and mad all day and, you know, cussing and stuff. I didn't know why my English teacher told me that I was going to die like one of my cousins. She told me I wasn't nothing. Because we was just joking in class. I wrote 2 New York Times bestsellers.
Come on now.
My English teacher told me I was nothing. Like, and she taught for 40-some years. Miss Clay, 40 years in the game. So it's like, we don't even know that we're being attacked. And by the time we know, it's even too late. Or it's like, yo, I've been attacked all my life. So now I just got to get my little education and get as far away from these problems as possible. And that's what we run into. That's the issue. So we got to acknowledge these devils that's in this world that's picking us poor people apart. Like, we got to, or we going to be stuck.
And real quick, Because, see, I'm glad you said that, and I want to just slide back the dial a little bit. For every situation where it's not a devil, there's a situation where somebody is not completing the task that they start out to complete in order to keep a salary to feed their family. And it don't have nothing to do with that. It's simply them choosing themselves. So we got the evil ones. We got the ones who run in the corporations and who really understand they wanted to privatize rap so they could sell more guns and mm-hmm. build more prisons, right? Yeah. But then you got people who run nonprofits in Baltimore City that do not fix the problem. They're getting money for black death. They're getting money because black kids can't read. They're getting money because black kids don't have anywhere to play. They're getting money because black kids don't get art in school, right? But they never teach the kids to go and build art for themselves. They never teach the kids to go and, you know, write books. They never teach. They just want to be able to say, we got 300 kids who read 3 books this summer, and now give us our $1 million back, where 90% of that goes to the operating budget, right? It's people who are doing it at every different level. People who are complicit in what's happening in order for them to be good. People who are the devil. So just so that other people who are listening say, I don't believe that people who run corporations are the devil. But those people are privileging their pockets, their livelihood, their family's livelihood over the forsaken.
So that's a conversation we need to come back to. The last part of what you said.
Yeah, nonprofit industrial complex.
But I think it's more complex than that, though, as well. I mean, so there's a lot of shysterism going on, but there's a lot of good work going on at the same time with a lot of groups. That it's a mixed bag. And everything's not, you know, that's a deep – when we reconvene on that particular point in the coming week?
Let's do that. Yes.
And we'll bring some of the folks we're talking about in to have the conversation.
You know I'm with that, Mark.
Let's go to the phone and get some thought in here. 410, I mean, for our listeners, 410-319-8888-G. We're going to go through 1, 2, 3 callers quickly so we can have some thought here before we have to break. G, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Wonderful program. I've been listening since the program began. And just, you know, I believe one of the brothers on there made a very good point, and I believe that it warrants investigating. The law of cause and effect is very, very, very important at this point, because our people are suffering from lack of knowledge in this city and throughout this country. And, you know, we need to know that who our enemy is, who God is, and who we are. And I believe if we take the time to investigate that and invest in that, then we can make a difference. If it's one, like Sister Mathana said, if it's two, but we have to deposit some right education that will help our young people to get out of the condition that we're in. And I believe that creating a educational system that will help one, then that one educates another, and this whole positive attitude can start to grow in this city and throughout this country. But thank you for an excellent program, and thank you for taking the time to listen to me.
Thank you for calling in, G. 410-319-8888. Linda, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Just wanted to say that, and I agree with almost all of what has been said, but if we're talking specifically about the issue of murder, murder is a spiritual issue. It is an act that flows from the heart, and, you know, whether it's because of greed or fear or anger or pride or a sense of competition, the fact that we have this increase or this crisis of murder is really, in my view, an indication of the depth of the spiritual crisis that's in our community. And when I'm talking about spiritual, I mean that inner person. This is something we can't think our way out, educate our way out. It is dealing with the root, as we talked, a young man mentioned at the beginning. You know, intellectually we understand poverty and the kinds of things that happen with that, but poverty breeds a sense of hopelessness and despair. Those are spiritual issues. And when we're talking about spiritual issues, the solutions have to include spiritual solutions. We do need to deal with the inner person. We need to deal with the fact that people are broken, and the darkness that's in their heart, whatever it is, and help them to understand that there's a solution for that. In other words, transforming the individual from the inside out. And we need to talk about spiritual transformation for our children, in our homes, in our communities, and until we deal with the fact that this is a spiritual crisis. It's not just limited to a geographical area. It's a spiritual crisis in the nation. You know, we see this uptick in the, you know, domestic violence, wherever we're looking at. But when we're looking at murder, specifically murder, that is an act, and it flows from the heart. And the heart of that individual is filled with either fear or anger or pride or greed, right, or whatever the motivating factors are. So, you know, as an educator, as an individual who, you know, has lived in Baltimore, you know, I run a nonprofit that deals with education issues, I understand the importance of, you know, a holistic approach. But at the heart of murder is that's a spiritual issue. It needs a spiritual solution. And so how, and we need to address that, admit it. We talk about pain. We talk about evil. Those are not, you know, those are not intellectual issues. So, you know, I'm just laying that on the table because the direct issue we're talking about is the uptick in murder. So that means there's an uptick in a spiritual crisis.
Linda, thanks so much for the call. Mathana?
Yeah.
I agree with you. I agree with that. And again, that also speaks to people of faith and belief. So there has to be a level of spiritual alignment when you want to create a connection to people. But also that's because I fully believe in spirituality. I believe in a higher power. I believe in the aspect of knowing that there's something bigger and bolder than you out in the universe that created all of this, right? But again, for me, it's not either or. It's in addition to. So, yes, there's some spiritual alignment that needs to happen. Yes, that's a huge aspect to it. But we also need to take conflict resolution in our community so that when people in our families have their own issues, they can resolve it themselves. They don't always. That's why we can minimize police influence when we can teach conflict resolution in our own communities. That goes to grief and family counseling. There's a lot of grief going on in our communities. Not even if you take, we're talking about violence and murder right now, but if you take that out and just talk about the number of deaths that happen in our communities based on health issues alone, when you lost Big Mama to her diabetes, so then on top of that, you put the murder and the death of someone who you didn't anticipate passing as quickly. So yes, absolutely. It's spiritual. There is some of that in there, but then you can't, it's not either or, it's an addition to.
Let's get one more quick call in here. Some final thoughts. We have to move on to Leah Gilmore's joined us to talk about her bluesism. Is it blues activism? Bluesivism coming up, and we want to hear about that. 410-319-8888 is the number of Baltimore Joe. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I go with the last two calls about the spiritual dimension. I'm a school teacher, and I see, you know, this the moral decay of second graders. So we have to even talk to our rappers and to talk about positive. And people, you know, rap has become, you know, very few, little rap I hear is positive. But this affects second graders. They talk about killing. So we have to get to them because the second graders hear this message, and they have this sexism. It's all these negative things that they hear from their heroes on the radio. It comes in the classroom, and so we need a spiritual. We have to look at. I heard one of your callers talked about a guy being strapped and have to do what he do. If he's doing something wrong, we have to have the courage to tell our friend, no, it's wrong. If you have to kill somebody to feed yourself, it's wrong. Unless you want to start a war, unless you want to, if you're going to do that, if you're going to have to strap yourself, take on the people who are hurting you, not the people who are in your neighborhood. And the last thing I want to say about school, we need to, I'm a Baltimore City school teacher and one of the most empowered schools in the city. We can't use the curriculum that they're offering us now. I see fifth graders reading on the first grade level. We have to say what you're trying, it's not working. We need the independence to choose something to teach our kids to read. And it's not what they're offering us, all these tests and all these quarterlies that the kids know that they're just going through the motions. We need to say, let's stop and teach you some basic skills. And then, you know, you can learn and read our history. You can read anything you want. But we're not teaching them basics.
Well, I'm sorry.
Thanks for taking my call.
No, no, and Baltimore Joe, don't hang up yet because I'd like to get your
okay.
to get your number when we have our next teacher show to have you join us to talk about your thoughts on education. It would be great to have you on the air with us. I think that'd be good. So hold on. Let me get that number. We'll get you on the show with us. So final thoughts here. We do have to close out this particular conversation, and I do want to come back to this maybe in the next week and really think about if we had the power, what would we do in the city to save the lives of our children from killing each other? But very quick closing thoughts. D.
I commend everybody that's out here doing work, everybody on the show and everybody that's out there in the streets trying to make a difference. I'm out here fighting with you or, you know, next to you. And I think that if we keep pushing hard, then it will get better. I believe in us. I don't believe in the system. I don't believe in none of these politics or politics, whatever they are. But I do believe in us.
I'm going to drop the mic on that. I'm going to pick up where he left off. I believe, I said this a couple of days ago, love to me is a driving force, but it starts with the love of self. If you love yourself, you don't want to have anyone experience what you yourself don't want to experience, which means the death, the loss, the pain. So starting with that sense of self-love, and then the next piece is let's all keep getting to work. And if you're not working right now, I know the listeners on the Mark Steiner Show are very proactive in the community, but if you're not working right now, just get to work. Find your one piece. Find your one plot of land, and eventually you'll be right next to your neighbor, plot, 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 and we'll be getting the work done.
Amen to that. My last takeaway is, you know, right now, you know, a lot of our children are hurting, are in pain. They might not be expressing it, and they might not be talking to you about it, but come across a young person, you know, for these next couple days, couple weeks, I don't know, buy them a sandwich, talk to them, get them some fries or something, give them something healthy, anything, you know, pat on the back, a hug, you know, a piece of paper, anything right now to, you know, just be a part of the process of healing. You know, like I said right now, I would love to give you an intelligent answer about something, but right now we definitely got to be in the process of healing and understand that everybody's going through this process of healing. You know, so be careful of how you act or how you feeling towards people right now in these, you know, next month or a couple of days coming. Do your best to bring some type of healing to people, some love.
I'm going to thank DevRock, D. Watkins, Mathana, James Whiteful, three of you, so much for being in this studio today. It was a very powerful, deep discussion. I appreciate you being part of this.
Much respect.
And everything that you all do. And this day is remembering the 133 people who've been killed in our streets so far in the city. Mm. And, of course, Tyrese Trayvon Watson, as known as North Scooter. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break and come right back with the great Leah Gilmore. Stay with us.